And welcome everyone to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is Tyler Yonke. We are doing, sorry about yesterday, but I've got a few things to talk about today, which is we're going to do stages 5 and 6, do a quick brief overview of those, talk about stage 7, and we're also going to discuss, did Johan Bruneel just say his job as a DS was useless, and did he say that he had nothing to do with the results of the Tour de France? We talked about that just a little bit yesterday, 2 days ago. Sorry I missed it. It's going to happen at some point. So stage 5, stage 6, look, we got the Giro going on here. Let's take a look at these specific stages. Stage 5 was Genova to Lucca, 178 kilometers. And then today's stage, and we're doing this in the morning. I know I said, hey, I'm going to do these in the evening. But, sorry, this is sometimes what happens. Viareggio to Rapolano Terme, 180 kilometers. And it had some climbing stuff in it. It had some gravel, 3 gravel sections. So, look, Between Two Wheels is live. Yes, it is, Victor. Sorry, it's such a whipsaw of when I'm going live and when I'm not. I appreciate you getting your notifications on, so we at least have that. I'm in the office this morning. I came in, I'm like, I got to do this because it's just not going to work this afternoon, so I needed to get it done today, or at least right now, this time of the day. I'm going to go to Twitter, though, because Johan, I've told you about this, where he's been saying all kinds of crazy stuff about, complaining about Benji and Patrick. And then he says, great, ex-cyclists are usually not very good directors. Okay, well, that'd be him. Simply because they didn't need a lot of tactics. Their talent and their strength made tactics quite secondary. I agree with you on that. Ex-cyclists weren't big champions, usually will be much better DS. They had to think, had to be astute, and had to use the circumstances to win or even sometimes survive. Secondly, I know and I agree that a lot has changed in cycling nowadays, and I appreciate that there are many people like, for example, Benji and Patrick, who can provide valuable information to teams due to their endless research. Teams should be open to get these studies on board, and many of them are. Some of that useful information can be used in deciding on a strategy or a game plan, but the calls before and during the races are decided by DS in the car or a road captain in the peloton, not an analyst or statistician. Yeah, okay, so that's all fine. This is Benji's reply, though. I agree with your point, but second point is just not correct in the current era of cycling. During races, depending on the role, I am in direct contact with team car and have influence on the calls that are made, not just pre-race or post-race. Oh, geez, he did a whole big thing here. Or post-race analysis. It's mid-race decision-making, too. Don't get me wrong. The DS is still the key person in the race, but it's always better to have multiple perspectives before making a decision because you're most likely to make the correct one. Additionally, the decisions that are made pre-race are important in races, a decision built on opinions. There we go. Interesting stuff. So with that in mind, so maybe we'll get right to the, let's move that off, get right to the results from yesterday. Let's start with stage 5 and let's go through the breakaway. Now, this was going to be a sprint day all along, but, certain things happened to possibly have changed that, which were the breakaway. So the breakaway gets up the road, and for the most part, the teams are looking to try to control it. There's a climb in there. Alpecin Phoenix, Jakobsen comes off the back, so Alpecin's kind of pushing it. Once again, these inner gear. I'm not going to go too deep on this one other than when we get up there, but there's a break of 4. It's got a Polte Comedy rider, FDJ rider, Cofidis rider, and Valgren for EF. And the group's taken off the front. They're still within 30 kilometers left to go. They still have a break going up the road. Now, there was a few wrecks in there. There's Christophe Laporte for Visma. They didn't quite he went down. Wait, we got some things here. Brian's chiming in. Finally, I get to tune into one of these. Can I ask if you have seen any action from Luke Lamperti? Seems like Miller is for the sprints and now Alaphilippe for punchy stages. Maybe they told Luke, it's your first Grand Tour, no pressure. Let me get to that. I've been looking for Luke Lamperti, and it is his first tour, and he's very young. So it's likely he's doing what he can. And sometimes you might be a little overwhelmed by the situation and the workload that's required. He's not the main lead out person. So we're not really seeing, I haven't seen much. Maybe I'll try to take a look a little bit deeper since you inquired about that. On the flip side, I have seen, and we'll see that in today's stage six, Sheffield has been doing a little bit of things. Another American in there doing a lot of work, and he was a heavy load workload today. Anyway, going back to stage five, there's this, Laporte crashes. We don't have a video or an image of it here, but it was going through one of the sprint spots, and he was leading out Coy, getting him in position, and then he hit him. He's got his hands on the hoods, on the tops, instead of in the drops, which is perfectly fine. This situation has happened to me multiple times, and I do worry about it because sometimes your hands are just slightly there. He hit like a manhole cover or something before there was a speed bump, and it wasn't the speed bump. The speed bump, I think, exasperated a little bit more. Hits this manhole, his handlebars immediately kind of pop or twist, and he tries to get control, and he can't do it, and his arms slip off, and then he goes right out down, and it was a pretty nasty little crash. That's happened. Sometimes it just happens because riding on the hoods is the most comfortable and sometimes even aerodynamic position if you can get stretched out there, depending on that. Okay, this wreck goes down with 26 kilometers. Mike Woods is involved. His other teammate is involved here. Attila Valter, there you go, for Visma Lisa bike. He was also involved. Mike Woods finishes, but he ends up DNSing for today's stage. The group comes in. There's some kicking climbs they've got going on here. The break looks like they're still going to stay out. I mean, look, 54 seconds. And what's interesting, at one point they were doing comparisons of the driving teams, the sprinters teams, the speed that they are going with the break, and it's matching on. It was all doing about the same kilometers an hour. Pretty impressive for this break group. They work really well together. Coming into the last five or so kilometers, the Polte rider, he just stops taking turns, but he did it in a slick way. And I was curious about these three. So it's the kind of the third tier team, the Polte rider, and then you've got the other two, which are all basically the big teams. Of the race, the experience, Cofidis, EF, FDJ, and I don't know if they just let this guy sit on, but he was allowed to do so. I don't know what you're going to do. They're all like, you know, we're going to drive to the line regardless, so we're just going to keep going at it. The breaks behind, you know, you got the sprint teams. They're expecting to bring this back, but I think they went too hard too soon to drop Jakobsen. And then, but they let them come back together. And then there was not cohesion between, is it Trek taking the lead? Is it Alpecin taking the lead? Ineos got involved there up to 3 kilometers to go, but then they sat up. And at some point you're looking here, the last few kilometers, it's 20 some seconds and it's done. This group is going to make it to the finish. The Polte rider had been sitting on at inside the last kilometer. You can see him here. He takes a jump off the front or from the back, and he attacks in the last 8 kilometers. Now, the problem you had is all these other three riders, Valgren, Tomas, and I'm trying to remember the FDJ rider's name, Bond maybe, or maybe that was the Polte rider. They're like, oh, who's going to be the person to jump up to try to get this guy now? Because someone has to do it. And in the end, that person could very well sacrifice themselves. Valgren kind of makes this half-assed attempt at it, but then he looks over and he's like, nope, someone else do it. And the FDJ rider ends up taking the front, and it to his detriment. So I don't know how he would have done on the sprint, but they don't close in. They're having a tough time. The FDJ rider's finally closing him down. And in the last, 200 kilometers or so, they finally, I'm able to see what the 200 meters. The other two guys are almost on him. The FDJ rider, there you go, you can finally see it. The FDJ rider is getting spit out. He's not having the sprint. Valgren opens it up, but Tomas of Cofidis gets their first win of the season. Now, what you don't get to see from behind, good job on him, good job on second place. What you don't get to see from behind is the final sprint. I mean, you see it a little bit, and some of these riders actually, look at here. We got Enzo Pollini was the FDJ rider. Andrea Pitrebon was the Polte rider in third place that kind of sat on but then attacked Valgren for EF in second, Benjamin Tomas in first for Kofidis. Caleb Ewing, right second place there behind Jonathan Milan. So, ahead of Bauhaus, Miller, Coy, Mikhaels. Now, I don't know to what extent the sprinters are really pushing as far as hard as they can to make this a good sprint to see much of anything. But we played clips 2 days ago, stage before, of Caleb Ewing complaining about his team. They've got split ambitions. And then I saw Benji and Patrick on Lantern Rouge saying, hey, this didn't seem, and to me, initially, I'm like, yeah, it didn't seem much like a good thing to be doing to calling your team out as well. You've got Metzger in there as a lead out. That's kind of, you know, damning for him. Then I watched Chris Horner's video last night, and he did a breakdown of Caleb Ewing and being out of position and his team not doing what they're supposed to. Now, so in his point, he's like, Caleb has a point of contention here. I don't know that it's good to necessarily call your guys out on TV. That to me seems not to be good. But Caleb has a lot of pressure on him. You can tell it's really mounting. He's not been doing well. But to see him actually get into a second place here on the field sprint, that's encouraging. But is it going to be doing much for the next few days, which today had a completely different stage? So today's race, stage six. Oh, so that was the results we had on stage five. So it was good. The point there is the break made it to the finish. Okay, the gamble and those teams have to figure out what they're doing as far as how much effort do we put into this early on. Maybe they baked themselves going over that climb, thinking that okay, we got rid of Jakobsen, we're getting rid of some of these others. But then those sprinters are coming back, and now your team has to get to the front to do all the work to pull this break back. But they didn't get it back. So this is the mass timing. And at some point, you know, they don't want to go too hard where then they don't have a lead out. But the problem is, if you don't go hard enough to bring that break back, then you don't get a chance to really even put that lead out into effect. And so it was a missed opportunity by the sprinters, and they had it set up all day. I think a thing that really played into this factor for this race was there was an initial break off the front over the top of the climb. There's a break off the front. And the big groups, Alpecin, they bring this back. But then there's a lull in the race, and everyone's like, sweet, the break's been back. Now it's going to kind of sit here, and we're going to be fine. And the next break went, and those guys had not been in the first one. They were a little bit more fresh, and then they were very determined, and they were closer to the finish than the first break was. So it was a perfect storm. And this is, look, we watch this, and you go, okay, it's a boring race, and it just comes down to a sprint. Sometimes it doesn't. And that's why you go every day when there's a break off the front. There's a break off the front. This is useless. These guys are just out there for TV. Are they? I mean, it was close. Kofidis, first win of the season. It's was yesterday was May 8th. That's, you know, we're in the fifth month of the year. Now, they do race in January down to Down Under. So, yeah, five-ish months of full-on racing. Kofidis finally gets a win. And congrats to them. And you know what? The guy, we did great job. And you know what? Tactics. This is the thing that's so stupid about Johan's thing, and he's trying to backtrack because I didn't find the tweet here, but he did tweet out where tactics are useless or they're not existence or something like this. I'm like, so you're literally saying that your job in the tour was useless. No, even when you have strong riders, you have to employ tactics. And especially nowadays with the marginal gains and when you see these riders that are, let's assume they're not doping, okay? They're not doping, let's assume that. Yet their times and their training and efficiency is peak from where it's ever been before. Okay, now what's interesting? We saw a few, you know, the 1999 Giro with Pantani. You know, the record time up the climb. Training has really surpassed where he is from back then. But he was doped so good, and he was an amazing climber that even with the bike he had and everything else, it still doesn't quite equal its way out. The point I'm getting at is, people are closer together, I think. You have from the bottom of the rung to the top, there's a lot better talent than there ever was. So you can't just go out and smash and expect to be the leader like he said you could do at the time. Even then, though, you've got to monitor this. You just can't have – otherwise, Lance, what's the point of the bus before – I've watched, you know, old race videos and they're in the bus. And I've been in those kind of things where you're talking about what you're going to employ strategies, you know, certain lineup for different people when you're going to go who are you going to let go up the road or not. These are things that make a lot of sense. And when you blow them and you don't have them, let's just take a look at a few random examples that I mean, this is just off the top of my head, legit here. Was it the 2006 Tour de France? Landis is in the lead. They let, I'm trying to remember the guy's name for Casa de Pana at the time. He gets, what, 10, 20 minutes up the road. And then they've got to pull him back at some point. And you're working that. If you didn't allow this to happen, Sepp Kuss last year, these teams letting him go up in the break of the Vuelta, which stage 6, 10, whatever it was, that he ended up winning that and then putting himself into position to win this whole thing, that was a mistake. You don't. These are tactical errors. Errors that happen. Okay, they catfished the sprinters teams. They likely did, and good for them. I mean, this is what makes it fun. Okay, let's go to today's sensational race. Now, this is up in the Tuscany area. They used some of the roads that were used for the Strada Bianca, which are some of the gravels. They had three sections. The first section was just, and by the way, it was warm, it was dusty, and then of course you have the motorbikes going in front of these riders just stirring up the dust, which to me, I was more annoyed even just watching that, just thinking of how annoying that would be. So this race starts off, is this the end of the race here that they're already going at? Okay, this highlights are just the last few bits of the race. So what I'll just break down, because it was none of the highlights are actually available yet. They haven't put them out on video. But the first, maybe we should go to the actual. Let's get up here to the actual profile. Okay, so there's the profile for today's race. First, what, 70-plus kilometers are just almost pan flat. And the brake was doing everything they could to try to get up the road, and it just wasn't really happening. They got this first climb here. It's a Cat 4, 4.6% at 8.6%. The brake did end up getting away after all this bumpy stuff. And then you can see these gray sections here. One, two, three sectors in the gravel. First section is pretty flat. Second one has a nasty climb. Third one has a little bit of an up and down. And then coming into the finish, the last few kilometers here, there's a steep pitch climb before the finish here. So what you end up seeing was everyone was trying to get in this break. It was a lot of work. Alaphilippe was really trying to get in the break early on. He wasn't able to get there. Later on, a group does form. It's got Matteo Trentin. It's got Alaphilippe. It's got Sanchez of Movistar. It has Luke Plapp, Caden Groves. And evidently, Caden Groves was really hammering it quite nicely and going up the climbs. Well, anyway, the group at some point through these first sectors before there, they ended up shattering a bit. And you end up just having Luke Plapp, Alaphilippe, and I think his name is Sanchez. Let me take a look here. I should probably do better research, right? But then you're like, but Tyler, that's not where we watch you. Maybe it is. Let's go back to the video. Okay. These three riders are up the front here. I do have his name here. Where'd it go? Paleo Sanchez, Alaphilippe, Luke Plapp were all up in this break. So they come to the first gravel section. Those three are making their headway. They have like 2+ minutes. Or so. Luke Plapp is actually the virtual leader on the road, but you don't expect this to be adhering to it too much. In the gravel section the first time, there's a small little kerfuffle. Ben O'Connor goes down. Danny Martinez goes down. Not hard. It's on a kind of an uphill left-hand section. Just kind of got deep in gravel. They had to chase back on. And on the front of the groups, you're really seeing UAE is trying to control things, but it's UAE. And then it's also Garrett Thomas's team, Ineos, and Magnus Sheffield and Arnsman are doing a lot of work. And then they go into the second gravel section. Now, this one starts to spit people out a little bit more because it's got some deeper climbs on it. And you see Utebrooks is up there. Danny Martinez is up there. Everyone's up there. I think the main GC rider for Lopez for Little Trek is the only one that's really missed out on this situation. Up front, Luke Plapp, Alaphilippe, and Sanchez are doing just fine. Plapp tries to drop these guys on the climbs. Can't quite do it. They're all holding together. They go through the third section of gravel. Same thing. It's all looking just fine. Everyone's together. Once again, those fields behind are just getting a little spit. But the group is now coming down. The lead is coming down closer to the 20, 30 seconds. They go over the steep climb, which is not in the gravel. Luke Plapp and Sanchez. Before they come into that, though, actually, Sanchez is on the front with Alaphilippe and then Plapp. They go around a roundabout, and Sanchez goes off the road, or almost off the road. He goes a bad angle. Plap goes straight through. Now those two are chasing to get back on. Alaphilippe looks like he's buried. Sanchez looks like he's coming good. Alaphilippe jumps back on his wheel. Now those three are together. Then they're dropping Plap. Then Plap's coming back. So that's an interesting dynamic all coming into it. Now, in the sprint, you're like, hey, Alaphilippe, he's the man. He's won two world championships. He's won, what, Liège? Has he won Liège? I don't know. But he's won a bunch of races in the Tour. He's this sprinty kind of guy, but he hasn't been good lately because his team director, Lefebvre, has been all over him, abusing him mentally about his drinking, about his wife, about all kinds of stuff, and trying to use this leverage, I think, on him to be better. And I think it's not necessarily been good for him. However, Alaphilippe has been doing better as of late. You know, he had some bad crashes. Actually, I think that was the Liège crash that he had had. But he has been a little bit better, and he was doing a lot of work to get in this break, and then he looked pretty solid up front. So you'd expect, well, I thought Luke Plap would be able to get away from these two. He couldn't do it. If it's going to come down to a sprint, I don't know much about Sanchez in a sprint, but I expected Alaphilippe to be good. Behind, Romain Bardet takes an attack up the top of the climb. He goes over, but no one's really going much. Poggi, he's there, but he's not really taking much of an active role. The rest of the guys, they're coming back in. So 2 kilometers, it's 20 seconds. Not much is happening. And then Pikkelee, former EF, ends up attacking off the front. He's trying to close things down, but he's not really making much headway. These guys actually work really good together coming into the finish. Once again, no one's really able to do much of anything. Coming into the final 1 kilometer, into the final kilometer, Plap gets put on the front, and about 150 to go, Alaphilippe jumps. But Sanchez is right on his wheel, and then the road curves around a little bit. I think Alaphilippe actually has too big of a gear, and when your legs are a little bit tired after the end of the day, having too big of a gear is often the worst thing they can do. He's not able to have much of a kick, and this Sanchez fellow comes across the line shaking his head in disbelief for the win. Then the rest of the group comes in. You know, there was an incident, a few things on the road. Damian Novak of UAE was all bitchy with Sheffield at one point. I think and they were coming around a right-hand curve, and Novak and Magnus was on the far right, just a little bit like half wheeling behind, half body length behind Doma Novak, and Novak decides to just go from like the right edge of the road. There's room to his right, and he's going to just suddenly squeeze out Magnus. But Magnus like sticks his hand, and Novak freaks out. He then swerves across the left part of the road, gives him the middle finger, and like it was. And Sheffield just kind of like, hey, no problem, buddy, and just keeps on riding. It was interesting, but you can see how tensions can be built up during a race, and you're under stress doing work, and I think that was such an overreaction to how things were. Okay, Brian said, well, first of all, Victor says, Tade, Poggi, yeah, he's up there. He posted up too early in Liège, that's right. He posted up too early in Liège. I'm trying to remember which race it was that he did crash. He hit the motorbike, and that was problematic for him, being Alaphilippe. The rest of the group came in, and Mezgic actually was up there for Jayco. Pikkelee ended up holding on for fourth place, and then the rest of the riders came through. So no change for the overall, at least as far as the top few. There might have been some. We'll take a look, actually, at the stage results. Then we will get you out of here for today. All right, let's take a look here. Sanchez gets the win over Alaphilippe and Luke Plap. Plap said he was kind of going between all day, thinking about like, hey, the yellow jersey or getting time. He said the pink jersey, he never really tried to get much thought of ever doing that. He said they weren't going to let him go too far ahead. So as far as GC goes, let's see if there's anybody that dropped out. Nicola Conchi dropped 8 places. So that's about him. So it looks like Lopez did make it back up there for Little Trek. So Little Trek was able to get him back up there because Nairo dropped 2 places. He's okay. Kevin Vermarca down 3 places. Damiano Caruso, he was another one that went down in that wreck on that corner, and he did not make it back together because he ended up losing 28 places overall. Honore loses 4. Ruben Fernandez. So, Max Schachman. No one really, you know, the top ones pretty much all stayed together. As far as points jersey goes, Jonathan Milan still in the lead. KOM should be, it's Tade now over Calmajan. Calmajan's in second at 32 points. Youth jersey is Utebrooks. And second is Alex Bodine. And then the teams is Ineos now. They did a fine job today. So let's take a look, because tomorrow, so we got Friday. Here's the weekend. Here's what sets up to be the weekend. You've got time trial tomorrow of how many kilometers? 40 kilometers with a good last, what, 6-7 kilometers here uphill. So it has this section, 1.3 kilometers at 10.7%. I mean, on a TT bike, are they going to do it? Are they going to switch? Maybe they're going to do like they did last stage of the Giro last year. And then it just continues to climb on up. So you've got 35 to 41, you know, almost 6 kilometers there of just continually moving up, 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 which could be, you know, interesting. So is this a Ganes style day? Is this a Poggi day? You know, we'll take a look at and who's really going to be the people dropping out. Then you have, that's Friday. Then Saturday is actually a mountaintop finish at Prata de Tivo. 7% of 14.7 kilometers, a Cat 1. It's got a Category 2 to begin with, Category 3, and then this finish up this straight. I mean, this looks very consistent climbing here. And that's Saturday and then Sunday. What's Sunday going to be? Sunday, a little bit more of a bore. This would be an Alaphilippe-style day. Pitch, pitch, pitch at the end. So who will be the new Alaphilippe? Maybe Alaphilippe comes back and he's starting to feel like that's something he can do. Mark Tucker joined us. ES has kept us entertaining to watch. So yeah, you look at the EF group that came out here. They have for overall, you know, Chavez, and he's not the Chavez of old. But what they've done with Valgren, Honoré, Piccoli, they've been trying to really get in the breaks, and I think they've been doing a good job. You know, second yesterday with Valgren. Fourth today with Piccoli. They're not doing shabby. And I think at some point they are going to be able to make it and actually get themselves a stage win, which I'm hoping for. Okay, so let's go back here to the individual time trial and discuss this. This is, you know, you look 40 kilometers, you're like, hey, it's going to be Filippo Ganna type of day. That'd be great. But that climb is a little bit suspicious, although we've seen Ganna, the power he put on stage 4 coming into the finish of the Milano-San Remo style stage there. He does decent climbing. He's won a stage at the Giro, I believe, going up the climb before. So it's not out of his realm to be able to do that. And he did. He put out a good show on the front today, and then he sat up and rode himself in. So I think he was saving himself a bit there. Let Arensman and Sheffield do a lot of the work. And so that was perfectly fine. You're going to see him at least as one of these outside riders that's not in the GC really be able to push for it, and I think he will be likely in the top 10. But as far as the GC, because I want to go back here to the GC riders, and we'll take a look and kind of break down who we think is going to now. Poggi, I mean, we've seen what kind of time trial he can do. Stage 20 of the 2020 Giro, wasn't it? Plata de Bay. He ends up winning that, destroying Roglic. So he's obviously got it in him, but he's had some trouble going against Jonas the last few years. But we obviously know Tadic can time trial just fine. We saw what he did, stage three, one of those two, coming in there with Geraint Thomas on his wheel, with Geraint's barely trying to hold on. That's a time trial type of thing. We saw what he did at Strada Bianca. We saw what he did at Liège. You're going a massive distance. He can obviously climb and go just well. So this would be a great opportunity, and I expect him to be doing well. The big battle I'm going to be looking for, though, is can Geraint Thomas put on that kind of display as well? This is almost, it's not quite the same. It's a longer stage, but that finish kind of reminds me of an elongated stage 20 of the Giro last year, where he just faltered to Roglic. So that will be an interesting thing to see, but Geraint always goes well. Dani Felipe Martinez, I think he's technically the time trial champion of Colombia, but that is always in quotes to me because there's not always a lot of guys that time trial well there, and so sometimes you're just having a bunch of mountain goats go at it, but he does time trial okay. Utebrooks, I haven't seen him be able to time trial to save his life, so that won't be much. Ainer Rubio of the Movie Star team, once again, a climber. I don't know about him. Lopez for Little Trek, I'm not sure. Jan Hertz up there in eighth place, he can go pretty good. Lutsenko, so there you finally get into. Lutsenko should be fine as a time trialer. Ben O'Connor, Storer, Plapp, Filippo Zana, Jonathan Narvaez, who's a 17th, he can time trial, so that will be an interesting thing to see how he goes. The point I'm really getting at here is I think it's going to be a blow away for the top two for the GC portion of that. That's going to be Tade and Garrett Thomas breaking out, and they're going to be putting a lot of time on everyone else, but I fear that Tade is going to put maybe like 40 kilometer time trial. You could put a minute plus on some people here. This is maybe going back to good old days of the past. Okay, Mark says, off topic, am I the only one that thought Binium has been overhyped since crooking his eye out and now the rain riding? Because he did win a stage here at the Giro last year. So it's not, and didn't he win a semi-classic as well? Let's take a look here. Let's go look at Gourmet. I don't even know how to spell it. Gourmet. There we go. Binium Gourmet. Let's take a look at his results. Okay. So let's go back to 2023. He Paris Tours, nothing. Paris Chanet, 7th. Grand Prix Wallonie, 7th. Tour de France, he was his best place there. He had a 3rd place. Okay, Tour de Suisse. He won stage two of the Tour de Suisse. He had a 4th place at Brussels Cycling Classic, Tirreno Adriatico, 3rd place, DNF. He had a 1st place at the Volta Comitat Valencia, 2nd place at Trofeo Palma Palma, DNF there. Okay, so no great. That wasn't his year. What about back in 2022? Let's go from the bottom up. Trofeo, once again, he won there. 4th place in Paris-Nice. 1st place again, Wevelgem, Flanders. Okay, so there you go. 2 years ago, what was this? 2022, he did win Ghent, Wevelgem. So he can move. And he also won a stage at the Giro, stage 10. Then he also won national championships of Eritrea. Okay, no offense. One of my best friends growing up was from Eritrea. We would try to go do some cycling. He was really good runner, as you can imagine. Not so good at cycling. Okay, so, you know, look, I wouldn't say that he was the worst person here. Okay, Mark's got some other things. The one where MVP sat up, yeah. Okay, he gets big shout-outs from commentators in every single race. Look, what Mark is trying to make me do here is take the DEI or the the whole thing where you then place more emphasis on someone because of maybe where they're from, maybe their gender, maybe their ethnicity. So he's getting a lot of praise, I think, because he is from Eritrea and you don't see a lot of cyclists from there. Now, the same doesn't happen from, because it's a smaller country, so it's normal to happen. So people pull for him. Hey, he's a black rider it's like the Williams brothers, right? No? Maybe not. Williams brothers are national champions of Belize too. Thank you for doing that. So I think you get some shout outs from people, the Binium Gourmet as an example for that. Now, I think he deserves it because he is a pretty good sprinter and he's not second tier. He does get up there. He does be able to fight for the front, and he's not so bad. So, and he's won some big races. So I think it's fine. The hype is a little overblown. Okay. And you just see that from the commentators. I think sometimes they feel like they want to be so inclusive that they go out of their way of saying that when you've got someone like a Phil Bauhaus that's always up there in the top, you know, top three, top five, and he's not getting the shout outs. So there you go. But you know what? In your defense now, he corked, you're right, he corked himself in the face after winning the stage and had to pull out. Now he's riding in the rain. You've got some good points here. Good points. Isn't Froome African? Okay, so now you're really... Yes, and you know what? Speaking of which, we're going to go now to our outro, which is Chris Froome from the Volta, from the Giro a few years ago, 2019. I'm a fan of Chris Froome as far as I wish he was. I want to see more. By the way, good news here. Vingegaard has been back on his bike, so I don't know, 50, 60 days or so till the tour. So we have a chance to see the four main guys back at the tour. I don't know what that's going to do for anybody, but here we are. Last thing, I bet Eritrean streaming subscriptions to Eurosport have never been higher. Perfect. Thanks for live streaming Between Two Wheels. Of course, thanks, Victor and bye, Mark. So, you guys, if you appreciate or you want this to be during this time of day, I could possibly do this. I'm supposed to be working. At 9:40. I got to drive to Stockton today, of all places, for a hearing this afternoon. Gross, gross, gross. But here we are. Everybody, we'll see you tomorrow.
Froome now, he goes on the offensive, he goes on the attack over the top of this final climb, and nobody at the moment can go with him.
He has 75 kilometers to go, and now under the Flamme Rouge, there he is still, the virtual Malia Rosa on the road. Who would have thought it at the start of today? But Chris Froome.